1-0 defeat at home to Cardiff at the weekend. It gave us the sum total of 5 points in the last 10 games. 1-1, drawn 2, lost 7, 4 straight defeats in a row. Goal difference of minus 9. Inevitable, but the timing might have been a bit of a shock, yeah? Ian?
In the sense that I didn't think Steve Lansdowne would sack him, yes. In the sense that my honest belief is he should have gone a while ago, and I'm not going to change from that. It's a little bit, you know, some of the eulogies have been really, really overstated. I mean, I thought the sports editor from the Evening Post was going to commit Harry Carey on the steps of the Colston Hall. I mean, yeah. Dear me. You know, all right, look. Let me tell you what I've got. I may have a slightly different view of this. When Lee's got the sack, Lee's going to get something approaching £1.5 million. Now, he'll either get it over the next 3 years, or if I know Steve Lansdowne and how much he loves him, he'll cut him a cheque for it or find some way of paying it into a pension fund so he doesn't pay a great deal of tax or something like that. Whereas most managers, Chris Hughton, for example, are getting paid while they look for another job. And as soon as they get another job, they stop getting paid. That seems to be the way it works these days, whereas years ago it was different. So when Gary yeah. Johnson left, got a whacking great payoff. All right? Now, yeah. Steve was the guy that gave him a four-year contract last year when people were calling for his head then. And I think that was Steve Lansdowne's way of, A, expressing confidence to Lee, and B, saying to the fans, it's my call, it's my club, and if I want to give him a four-year contract, I will, because I'll have to pay for it. Well, guess what? Now he is. Now, yeah. I've got friends of mine who are going to lose their job soon, and some already have, and it's going to run into millions of people if we're not careful. They will yeah. get 3/5 of 5/8 of bugger all is what they'll get. So, no, I don't feel sorry for the guy. I think he got a fantastic opportunity. It, for me, it was too early in his career, and it was on the back of a bang average lower league managerial record. Bang average.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I'm sorry, but with the average tenure of a championship manager being 9 months, to get 4.5 years and not be able to do it, and by do it, I mean get in the playoffs or get promoted, I think the last thing that he can say is, well, look, I don't really think I've had a fair crack of the whip. That would be my take on it. And I'm not feeling yeah. sorry for a guy that's walking away with an absolute ton of dough and a massively enhanced reputation.
Yeah. Okay. We're having a few problems getting a couple of people who are supposed to be in with us getting online for some reason. That's Pete and Paul. Ah, Exiled Robin is now coming into the room, so I'm going to connect him. But one question, Andrew over in, if I think it's the Andrew I know, over in Stoke Bishop, I'll put this question to you, Ian. How much do we hold the players accountable for poor performance, and who is up there, i.e. not showing commitment on the pitch? Are some of these players accountable for Lee Johnson's demise? I'll put that one to you, Ian. I'll put the same question to Exiled Robin, Paul. But first of all, you, Ian, do the players have any accountability?
Well, I think that what they've got is contracts. And people say, well, you know, okay, you've got to blame the players as well. You have got to blame the players as well. Because I'm sure Lee Johnson didn't sign Jada Silva on the basis that he couldn't cross a ball or he struggled yep. to pass it. But he signed him. So, yeah, and he had the player on loan for a long time before that. Same thing applies yes, you're right. to Casey Palmer. So it's not a question of, well, you know, I've signed the bloke and all of a sudden he can't cross the ball. So, yes, the players have to take responsibility. And I think we've got ourselves in a bit of an awkward position at the moment where in next summer we will have 8 or 10 really good players out of contract.
Yeah.
So one of the things that whoever the new manager has to do when he comes in is he inherits that, and then he says, right, first of all, he's got to do is, right, who's going to stay? And yeah. it needs to be done quickly. Who's going to stay? Do you want to stay? Do you want to go? Right, you're not signing the new contract. Get your agent in. Okay.
Get out.
Fam. Yeah. Jiju Eliasson, Nathan Baker's out of contract next summer.
Yeah.
I think Zach Viner's out of contract unless he's signed another one before.
Well, there's a lot of work to do for the new. There's a lot of work to do for whoever comes in. Let me give XR Robin a shout since he's come into the room. And Paul, I started off by saying the timing came as a bit of a surprise, actually. I mean, did the timing surprise you?
A little bit. I think the stated aim this season has always been the playoffs, hasn't it? And I think, obviously, after Saturday, that wasn't going to happen, definitely, barring a ridiculous set of results. I think the suddenness of it probably did. But I guess, yeah, internally at the club, I suspect there was obviously some discussion after the first couple of defeats after lockdown that, you know, if we are, as and when we are not in the playoff race, that's going to be it. I do suspect, I wonder if the short summer is going to have anything to do with that decision as well, because there's not going to be a lot of time for a new man.
Well,
actually now, you might have a few, you know, three or four games for someone to get in and have a look at the squad, as Ian was saying, see what's there, assess what they might need, and then have literally just 4 or 5 weeks to sort of turn something around.
Well, that's interesting. It's interesting you make that point about the timing of somebody coming in. I'll just ask you that same question that I said of Ian that had been asked by Andrew. Do you think the players carry any accountability for it? You hear that oft-used term, lost the dressing room, but you know they didn't look like they'd been, they didn't seem on it in any of the games, bar maybe that opening half against Forest. But should the players be accountable in any way?
They obviously are to an extent, but I didn't really see any sort of lost the dressing room attitude at all. I think we were being set up by Lee Johnson to play in a certain way. I think the players were trying to play that. I think there's a lack of confidence, and it's been clear one thing Lee Johnson hasn't been able to do over the last 4 years is end the losing run, and you know he's obviously still struggling with that. We're still not able to get out of these ruts we get in. I think there's a lack of confidence. I think we've got a reasonably good squad, but I think we've got quite a samey squad. I don't think we've got a huge amount of difference in it for someone to come in and spark it. And I also wonder, don't get me wrong, I'm very much on the more sympathetic side of Lee Johnson than Ian is, and have a lot of feelings for him and the work he's put in. But he's also not been afraid to throw players under the bus. And I think that eventually that leads to players not wanting to take too many risks and being nervous and edgy on the pitch. And you saw Jack Hunt made a pretty bad mistake in the game against Sheffield Wednesday, wasn't it? Suddenly he's not in the squad. And that's got to have an effect on the squad and the players at some point in how they approach their game, even if they don't realise what they're doing.
Yeah, that's man management really, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, Tom Rawls contributed here. He says he didn't think Lee would go until the end of the season, even with that bad result. Let's look back on his time in charge, though. It was characterised by those streaky runs. He's got that name from one of the Sky pundits. I was going to title this debate The Good, the Bad and the Ugly of Lee Johnson, but there's loads to talk about. So I'll go back to you, Ian, and keep it brief on here. The high point of his reign, 4 years and 4 months, near enough, the high point of his reign, and what would be the bad and the ugly? So let's look at the good and what would be the bad and the ugly from your perspective. And I'll ask you the same question in a moment, Paul.
Yeah.
The good would be the cup run, the Man United result and the two games against Man City. I was proud of us then. And the season when we pushed Bobby Reid up front, basically because we had nobody else. Everybody else was injured. And that really worked out. So I give Lee credit for taking a bang average, send him out on loan attacking midfielder and turning him into a good centre forward that we sold for 9 million plus an add-on we won't get. So well done for that. The downsides have been a record equaling, and bearing in mind we haven't been the most successful club in the history of the game, a record equaling, record winning, losing streak. Was it 8 games on
eight,
the trot?
Eight in a row, just like his dad.
I think that was really bad, and many managers would have gone after a run like that. In fact, I can't think of another club in the division who would have kept him, although he had a very similar run at Barnsley and their chairman hung on to him as well. So I think he's been lucky to work for two real quality guys who gave him the chance. But that would be the thing. And I think that would be my abiding memory, would be that Bobby Reid season, if we want to call it that. Let's be honest, in his first 16 games, I think we looked better than we did under Cots, but Pembo had started that turnaround.
Yeah, yeah.
And he finished well with players that weren't his. And then in his first full season, we missed relegation by
By 3 points, because we started well. And then that 5-0 defeat away at Preston, which followed a pretty appalling game at Brentford, which I went to. That was the last time, I think Steve Lansdowne commented, after the Preston defeat, he has my full support. And it's interesting, Ian, that you say the two high points, the Bobby Reid and the Cup games, that was all in that one season, that 17-18 season. Let me ask you the same question, Paul. Abiding memory of Lee Johnson, and you sort of alluded to the downside, which is throwing players under the bus, but your abiding memory of Lee Johnson, good and bad.
Yeah, I think the Man United game has been talked about by everyone, obviously, in the last 24 hours. I think it's that whole month, though. If you look back at it, we had a great, great win at Sheffield United in December. We'd gone, we were flying at the table. We beat Man United. And then, you look an hour into the 30th of December when we were 1-0 up against Wolves, against 10 men. And I must admit, I thought Ashton Gate at that moment was probably louder and more rocking than it was against Man United. I think there was a real... We were on the up. There was a real feeling.
And we were saying, Wolves, we were chanting, Wolves, we're going to get you. And
we're coming for you,
happened. Look where they are now and where we are. Yeah.
And then, and it just seemed to turn from there. But in terms of other point, I think Fulham, obviously, a couple of wins at Fulham, both seasons. Let's not forget, it was only 3 months ago, in terms of relative season, that we were third in the league, having won at Fulham. So I think we've got to be a bit realistic with this baiting and badgering him of the poor form. We've been up there this season. It's fallen away since then, undoubtedly. And he hasn't, again, as I said, shown that ability to turn it around. I think in terms of the ugly, I think, for me, I'm just a little bit sad in a way about how it's dwindled out this season. It seems to have sort of slowly petered out rather than anything that's gone dramatically wrong. We've lost that identity talked about. We haven't really got an identity. We've lost that energy and the press. And even last year, you saw signs of it with certain players, and it's not really happened this year. And just sort of slowly... got worse. And I think the telling thing is that most people's favourite memories are away games, apart from the odd cup game.
Yeah.
They're the away games. And I think that's the telling story as well, that at home for 2 years now, we haven't really done that well or been very entertaining.
That's it. I think it's 19 wins, maybe 20 out of 53 games now. And for me, the Man United game, forever in the memory, that'll be in your top five in 50 years when Corrie potted it, and Joe Bryan's opener in that one, in fairness. But, I would say the ugly has been the mixed fortunes in the transfer market, more bad than good, I would say. And really and truthfully, I haven't enjoyed the Ashton Gate experience on the pitch. Yeah, behind the scenes, great. The Ashton Gate experience on the pitch since that season, when it all seemed to go Pete Tong from there. Okay, now, looking forward then, I mean, it was interesting that it was said that Dean Holden taking charge until a replacement is found, which by that statement suggests it's somewhere, it will be before the end of the season. But Gregor McGregor has said in the press today that the vibes are that they're going to take their time. Now, somebody said, I think, on the fans forum, the only rationale for taking their time is that would we get Eddie Howe or Dean Smith if they both get binned by their respective clubs when they get relegated? So let's look at the timing. Let's look at the timing of that. Eddie Howe or Dean Smith, if either of them got sacked, maybe even Steve Bruce, if Newcastle got new ownership. Let me go to you, Ian. If Eddie, is it worth waiting for those two, or would come on to the broader selection? But Eddie Howe or Dean Smith, would they be on a? Would you want them if they did become available? And they're the only ones that are worth waiting for, because all the other managers, are pretty much available now, aren't they, Ian?
Yeah, well, I'd take your point on Steve Bruce as well. You've got those guys, but unfortunately, without a crystal ball, you don't know if they will indeed be available. Now, if I was Bournemouth and getting relegated, as it looks like they will, I wouldn't get rid of Eddie Howe, because he's got them up before. He'll get them up again, I'm sure of it. And they play nice football. Now, how many of his best players he'll be able to hang on to is another question, because as soon as clubs get relegated, the vultures come around. and they pick off players, and we're no different. We'll do the same with players in League One and League Two.
Yeah.
So you could wait.
Yeah.
And lose the guy that's available now. Let's call that guy Chris Hughton for the time being.
Yeah.
You could wait, lose Hughton now, and then not get any of those, and then you're panicking, and then that at that point that's when you go for, I'll be kind and call it a cheaper option, but it's a less experienced in the championship yeah. option. You know, your Ryan Lowe, your Mark.
Well, let's come on to some of those
people
in a minute.
Like that.
Let me ask Paul the same question. Do you feel, Paul, that we should really be getting on with it? And I think you said right at the beginning of this broadcast, the close season could be a very short window. There's talk that 2021 season could start on the 29th of August. That's only, where is it, 5 weeks after City's last fixture against Preston North End. My view would be, you know, it would be good to get somebody in who could at least be watching from the stands from, say, the Stoke game and maybe taking charge for the last two. So Eddie Howe, and as somebody just said on our feed here, that's if Eddie Howe or Dean Smith wanted to come here, if they were fired.
Yeah.
But would you be moving and hoping to get somebody on board before the last two games of the season?
Yeah, I think I would. Eddie Howe and Steve Bruce aren't coming anywhere near us, let's be honest. They're going to look for bigger jobs than us. If we were a relegated Premier League team in the Championship, it might be a different issue, but we're not. They're not there. Eddie Howe is still favourite to be the next England manager, by the way.
Yeah.
So he's not coming
he's
here.
He's certainly not going to come.
Right. No, I think we've got to go. I think we've got
okay.
to move on. I think
okay.
We've
no,
got
so
such
that's
big
so
season.
you're as I am keen to get it moving. Such a big season. Sorry, Paul.
No, I say we've got such a big season that next season we're my worry is we're starting to get towards having a very bloated, expensive squad again, which is what we had last time we got relegated.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we haven't really had that for a while. And I just, you know, the signing of Naki Wells we all wanted in January, we all want Benekophobia there, which is all very well. But those guys and Callas and Bentley even and people like that, they're coming on big wages now compared to what we've been used to paying. And it's, we've got a danger of 22, 24 very, very well-paid players on the books that need to perform.
Yeah, well, we have. I mean, let's look at the runners and riders. Now, I put a thread on OTIB today. I said I would be underwhelmed if it was one of these four. Ryan Lowe at Plymouth, Richie Wellens at Swindon, Mark Robbins at Coventry, and one of the favourites now, I'm looking at Skybet as well, Michael Flynn. They would leave me underwhelmed. Let's look at the runners and riders on Skybet. I'm looking at it now. Michael Flynn over at Newport, he's 11-10 favourite, according to that, closely followed by Chris Hughton, Ita Karanka, Steve Gerrard, Mick McCarthy. And then if you go down, what was it, a 25-1 shot won the Derby, I think, last week. Ashley William, really? I know he was training, but you got your Carlos Calvajals, your Phil Browns, Steve McLaren, God help us. But down there is David Wagner. Let me ask you, Ian, go back to you, Ian. Over what, you know, if it was Hughton or Jovanovic, for me, either of those, I think that's great. But those other four that I mentioned, they're bright up and coming, but they've not done it at this level. Ian, who would your shortlist be and why?
My shortlist would be some guys that aren't available. Disagree with Paul about being able to get players. I mean, if you look, you've got Hughton, but the problem is he's probably still being paid by Brighton and being paid a lot of money. Other managers will come here if we pay them the money because they all love a project, don't they? That's what you've got to talk about in football these days, the project. We've got a fantastic ground, all bar one end. We've got an owner who's about the 120th richest man on the planet. We've got a £5 or £6 million training ground that's going to be finished. And we've got a squad of players that are underachieving. So if you look at the club as a package, I think we're a pretty attractive package. We're not up to our necks in debt. We're not going to get done for financial fair play. We're not going to get points deducted or anything like that. So, you know, I think we could have our choice of managers, but as other people have quite rightly said, those managers need to be available. Now, if we could get Hughton, I'd take him now. Steve Lansdowne could say to a manager, right, I'll pay you £1 million a year. Not a problem. If you get us in the Premier League, I'll give you a £4 million bonus.
Right.
Now,
back your ability to get us up.
Dave
just pointed out, just to pick on what you said about Houghton, Houghton's payoff from Brighton expired at the end of last month. So he's off the payroll there now.
Brilliant.
Is a good positive from that point of view. But I mean, he could, Houghton might be more attracted to being manager of the second City team, Birmingham City, even though I would say that's a little bit of a hornet's nest of financial shambles. Paul, who would
was in jail, Dave. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul, who would your shortlist of three be, of which any one of them you'd be happy for them to take the position in the dugout or on the bench going forward?
I think it's an interesting fork in the road, isn't it, for the club? You go for that experienced man as a sort of punt to get up in the side 12 months, 24 months, or do you look up and coming? I must admit, Mark Robbins, I wouldn't be averse to. I think he's done a tremendous job down at the other Coventry and obviously has links with us in the past. Chris Houghton seems a natural one. I think, there's been some talk about his style of play and what it is, but I mean, let's be perfectly frank, the style of play, again, at home games hasn't been great in the last 12 months anyway, so it's not as if we're going to be moving from an exciting, passing, zippy style of football to something more attritional, but he'd certainly get us organised, which we need. Yeah. I think it's any one of 10 names next, isn't it? You've got the likes of McCarthy or Jokanovic, who've got experienced hands, or you've got these up-and-coming ones. I think the one that would really underwhelm me would be Dean Holden, and I don't think we go down that route, but we have done it before at key points. If you look at Milan, at Tinian.
I mean, if he won the last five games and he was mooted to be the Oldham manager and the Bolton manager, which are both in his native Northwest, but that would be, as you say, typical Bristol City if we were to do that. I think Pete has joined us, Tyler SX up. It says he's connected. Are you in the room, Pete? Are you there? No, it says he's connected, and I tried to let him in. Are you there, Peter?
Well, I'm unmuted now, I think.
You're unmuted. We can hear. Peter, you've joined us sort of towards the, well, I guess what is the key thing about his replacement. And Ian and Paul have both sort of mentioned the positives of getting Houghton, maybe a Mark Robbins. Two names they didn't mention that are on my list here. For different reasons. Paul Cook of Wigan, how would he be as a shout, Peter? And then Mick McCarthy, who always casts with him, former ex-City player, Terry Connor, nice bloke, I've met him a number of times. But how would you feel if either Paul Cook of Wigan, who look like they're going to get relegated with a points deduction, or Mick McCarthy were to sit in the Ashton Gate hot seat? How would you feel about either of those two?
I think underwhelmed.
Nothing again.
I think underwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, either of those.
Yeah, I think so. I think that the point that was raised earlier about Pat Lamb and Bristol Rugby is absolutely the blueprint that we need to follow. And let's think about this. Who would learn?
So who would be manager? Is it Houghton or nobody?
No, I would look abroad, to be fair, because who has heard of the Wolves manager prior to him arriving at Wolverhampton? Who had heard of the guy that's taken over from Brentford? And I think we've got to do our research diligently and well. And to be fair, I think there are a host of European coaches out there that would be very willing to step into the, if you like, the bear pit of the Championship. Yeah. And, you know, I think that we've got to look abroad, perhaps to somebody who hasn't got a history, and just even mentioning the Mick McCarthy moment. I mean, if we know that football is a game for adolescents. It's played in an adolescent frenzy and, you know, with relationships souring all over the place. And look what happened to Ipswich Town when they got rid of Mick McCarthy.
Yeah.
And we've got to be really careful that this isn't our Mick McCarthy moment.
Yeah, so, getting rid of him.
All to play for.
How would you feel? You talk about foreigners coming in. Coming in the Championship, I think, is important. So what if it was Jokanovic or Wagner, either of those two, which have both taken sides up from the Championship to the Premier League, which is better than
Yeah, I think you've refreshed my memory about Wagner, and I think yeah, that's quite an interesting combination. But beware of the foreigner, because although you know they may be successful, this means that our youth policy is going to be toast. There were two youngsters mentioned recently as coming into our first team squad: Benayoun, a midfielder and a forward, both 16, 17 years old. So you know, bear in mind what's happened to morale. You know, we've really got to be careful about this, and there's got to be a coach put in place, not a manager. And the instruction has got to be from Steve Lansdowne is that we need to have the youth development. We must have Bristol players in that next squad.
Yeah. Okay. Ian, what's your view on the foreign coach option?
Well, if you look at what the best example I can give you is what Fosun did. Fosun have got more money than God. And they decided...
This is the backers of Wolverhampton Wanderers, Fosun, yeah, the sports agency.
Exactly right. They've as a business, they've got assets of something like 39 billion or something like that. So they decided that they'd buy a football club, but they didn't know anything about football. Okay, so unlike the vast majority of chairmen who thought, I'm a genius, they got in bed with an agent who had the players, the contacts, the manager. So that's how...
That's how Wolves signed, was it Nunes, the Portuguese guy, and that agent you're talking about there is Jorge Mendes, correct?
Correct. So you've got Mendes, and that's how they got the manager. That's how they got the really brilliant players on loan, and that's how they got promoted. That and a spine of good English players and playing three at the back.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Okay, sorry, I just want to put a comment in there. Paul, you've just added a little text message there. You say you want a manager, not just a coach. Someone who comes in and challenges Mark Ashton on transfers and recruitment. I mean, again, Lee's carrying the can for the failure, yeah? Somebody to challenge Mark Ashton, yeah? But Mark Ashton is part of the model, you know, of... He's chief executive. He's not director of football. He's chief executive, not director of football. But, you know, some of these more experienced managers, they might look and challenge him, and that might destabilise things. So just expand on your statement in that message you just sent me, Paul, about someone who's going to come in and challenge Mark Ashton, because, you know, he's fast. There was a thread on OTIV today that I read it in the first 30 seconds. I thought, really? And then I realised that it was a wind-up. But if anybody reads Mark Ashton speaks on OTIB, you'll see what I mean. But sorry, back to you, Paul. Somebody comes in and challenges Ashton.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of questions need answering about our current structure and how we do things. I think, you know, there's Mark Ashton is in charge of recruitment. He's stated that on Radio Bristol interviews and different things before. He has a recruitment team. He has the coaches. He's never replaced Mervyn Day, who was got rid of nearly a year ago. He's a very, very good, without a shadow of a doubt, he's an excellent commercial operator. He's a very good CEO. I've not got a bad word I can say about him in that sense, in lots of ways. But it feels like he's maybe trying to step too far with what he's trying to do on recruitment. And we obviously get targets of players or types of players. I think he provides then a short list. You've got a question based on the signings of the last 2 years. 18 months, how good are those shortlists? And if that's all the manager's got to choose from, there's only so much a manager can do. And I know Ian slightly disagrees on this. We've had plenty of debates on Twitter, but I think it's just, let's question it. Let's look at it. Is, as you would in any business, if you've just basically failed on what you believe is a five-year project to achieve your aims, which you could argue we have, then you don't just look at one man and say, that's it, we'll carry on as we were and hope for the best. You need to look at all areas of a club and how we're doing it. And I'm not saying we want to overhaul it, but you might want to tweak it. Might want to look at bringing in a proper director of football or head of recruitment, at least, rather than the bloke who's trying to also run the club and run it commercially, trying to be in charge of it.
Now, it's interesting you say bring in a director of football distinct from a chief executive, because Peter, you said to me over the weekend when we were talking that, you know, if Lee had that, you know, he is a bright up-and-coming coach, which it's gone wrong for him here, but if you said to Lee, we're going to bring in somebody above you, we want to totally restructure it, but we don't want you to go. This is for Peter. Yeah, and I've got another question for Ian in a moment. But for Peter, would Lee have been too proud to have accepted some advice? Is he so sure of himself that he'd view that as a slight? Because we all remember John Ward, this is going back 24 years, or 23 years, when he got promoted, he said he needed help, and he was big enough to say he needed help, and he wanted to bring in Ray Harford, yeah? Scott Davidson went out and brought in Benny. Scott Davidson then. And equally, a few years ago, I think it was when Brian Tinian, he needed help, and he was left with Keith Millen. So, Peter, restructuring the coaching, you know, saying Mark is chief executive, director of football, or replace the coaches, you know, just expand on that. Peter. No, we've lost Peter. Ian, can you hear me, Ian?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, you're there. Ian, let me go on to the next question I had. In his final press conference, and he has said, Lee was bleating a little bit about having to sell players, yeah? Having to sell players. And we look at Brentford, who sold, they've applied a similar policy and are obviously doing it significantly better than we are. But let's look at the players that he's had to sell. And I'm just going to rattle off six names here. Reed, Flint and Brian, the mainstay of the 17-18 side, they all wanted to play at a higher standard. And it's no coincidence that none of them, in my opinion, either they were tired or they were just thinking about where they were going in the summer. But he sold those three, right? So I don't think he's got a case there. Lloyd, Webster and Brownhill, big tick in the box for all of those. If you look at what he paid for them and what they sold, what came through the academy. But, you know, this selling players, Ian, every manager, bar about six clubs in the world, they're a selling club if the right offer comes along. And if a player wants to go, you can't keep unhappy players, can you?
No, and all of the players you've named wanted to leave the club.
Yeah.
All of them. And I know two of them reasonably well personally, and they wanted to go and they wouldn't have come back under Lee because Bobby had a chance to come back in the last transfer window and went to Fulham instead.
Yeah.
Now, I'm my own view is that if a player wants to better himself, so Adam Webster, let's take an example, signed him for $3.5 million, sold him for $20 million. As Lee Johnson described it to me, it was 20 million plus, plus, plus. So it was 20 million plus add-ons, right? So we signed him for $3.5 million. We had to give Ipswich 20% of the profit.
Yeah.
But we still finished up with a tidy amount of money. Now, every club in the EFL, bar none, has to do that. And most clubs in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Okay. They do. And even if you're Liverpool and Barcelona come in for Coutinho, he goes because he wants to. And I saw Adam Webster play a friendly before he left. And I wouldn't have given you £2 for him.
You're talking about the 5-0 home defeat against Crystal Palace.
And because there weren't many fans there, you could hear some of the conversations going on between the touchline and Adam Webster. And I wouldn't have given you 50 grand. For Webster, never mind about 20 million. So I think this thing about selling his best players is an absolute urban myth because if they'd have made him sell his best players and said, right, you've sold Adam Webster, now you've got to play Zach Viner, now you've got to play Taylor Moore. Oh, and by the way, Cameron Pring is going nowhere because he's playing left back.
Then
I'd say, fair play.
He's got a point. And he's had to operate within the guidelines laid down. He has been backed in the transfer market. There's no doubt about that. Okay,
massively.
Let's start to look forward now. Next game is against Hull. I'd put £50 on us to win that one. Yeah, I really do think that. Dave Fevs, if you want to dial in, you can. I think I said you tried to get. Oh, Fevs is connecting, so let's bring Fevs in on this as well. Let's look forward, right? We get a new man on board. Let's assume that we decided that Ryan Lowe was the choice. would Ryan Lowe have a free hit next season, right? Rather than if you get Houghton in, we'd expect immediate results. Would Ryan Lowe get a free hit? And we might see the likes of, as you say, Cameron Pring, Walsh, Morrell, Backinson, Johnny Smith, Taylor Moore stake a claim to prove how good they are. Let me put that question back to Paul because he's been waiting patiently in the background. Yeah. Is there a higher expectation if we get a Houghton over a Ryan Lowe? Paul.
Yeah, I think there is. I think that's an interesting point on the young players. We've got, you know, 6-7 of them out and about who are looking like they might come into their first team reckoning. But, you know, then it depends what the objective is. If Houghton comes in with the objective of finishing top two and getting promoted, I can't imagine he's going to want to fully commit to the prospect of playing the likes of Bakinson and Smith and people like that. You know, maybe one or two might come through. But, you know, if you bring in someone like a Lowe or a Robbins or a Paul Cook and say, right, okay, let's have a solid year. Let's bring some of these guys through, see if you think it's good enough. And then we'll go for it next year. I think that's the fork in the road the club have to make. You know, they have to make that decision right now and decide how they're going to do it, because we can't keep Morell and Walsh for another season not playing.
No. I mean, we don't know what the financial climate in football is going to look like going forward. I think we've achieved a lot just to wrap up this season in this division in the manner that we have done with playing the games. But, you know, what money is going to be available? Okay, turnstile money is but a small part of total income. But, are you still with us there, Pete? If I can come to you on that. Are you still there, Peter?
Yes.
Peter, would you, if they appointed Ryan Lowe, which many would say is the cheap option, and say, look, we're giving you a free hit this coming season. We want you to blood some of the youngsters that are now 22, 23 that were bought in 3/4 years ago by Johnson. Would you give that person, that young manager, a free hit as opposed to Houghton, where if Houghton got the job, it's top six as a minimum, top two ideal? Your answer to that one, Peter.
Difficult one, that. The expectation management that would need to go around that first option from the board to the fans would be a really hard job, because what will happen in this turbulent time is that some of the clubs aren't going to be around. There's going to be some failures. There's going to be some managers looking for jobs, and there's going to be players looking for jobs before we really start to get back into the whole gamut of the whole rhythm of football as it was pre-March. And the expectation management around that is very difficult. Personally, I would like to see an experienced coach from abroad hit the ground running with nothing but a target of a promotion next year, because there are some very capable players in that squad. The one thing that we lack is a man to get a good tune out of them.
Yeah. Fevs, let me bring you in and then I'll come on to Ian. Fevs, experienced, a prerequisite, non-negotiable, or one of these sort of up-and-coming Lowe, Wellens, Robbins types? I'm not even going to include Michael Flynn. But Fevs, do you think, you know, would you tolerate a season of consolidation? Bearing in mind, Ian also reminded us how many players are out of contract in 12 months' time. Yeah, and what the financial status of football will look like. What's your view on, you know, just having a consolidation season with not one of the well-known names in charge? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think if we'd gone down that route of deciding that we can't bring in that name manager like a Jokanović, like a Houghton, then we have to understand, and I think Pete said it, absolutely spot on, it's about expectation management of that new person that comes in. What are you giving them? What tools are you giving them with to meet those objectives? And if you're going to give them, you know, a reasonable budget and still want, you know, a top half finish, fine. You know, you might look at certain names rather than maybe some others. I think if you're saying, actually, I want someone to come through and I really do want my vision of, you know, I want 11 Bristolians or 11 youth team players playing in the city team, then you might look to certain other people's as well. And I think that's the bit we don't know at the moment. We can throw all these names about and say he's playing for the job or he's not. But actually, one, we don't know whether they're available. Two, we don't know whether they want to come here. And I did like Paul's comment earlier on around not necessarily, you know,
let's, you know, challenge what Mark Ash does. But I think that the club, if they want to get the right man in, they need to maybe look at it not being all give, give, give from the new manager. And also they need to look at their own structure. And, you know, if it was Chris Hughton come in and say, actually, I want the recruitment talent ID team to report into me, because I think that's the most important thing in a club.
Yeah.
You, if you want Chris Hughton, you accept it. If you say no to that, then you don't get Chris Hughton. And I think there's a whole load of
dynamics Chris Hughton will probably bring Paul Trollope as his assistant, I think. He's been an assistant at Norwich and at Brighton. And do you think sentiment will go out the window such that McAllister, who's Lee Johnson's mate, maybe that's why he hasn't got the caretaker job, and Holden, do you think it's sayonara for them at Ashton Gate, whoever gets the job in... Let's say they do it in August. Would you say they're going to be going on their way as well?
I'd say the likelihood is yes, they will be. But I guess certainly in Dean Holden's position, he's got something up to 5 games now to actually put himself, you know, in a position to stay around, or even put himself in a shop window for a job elsewhere. So I'll get behind him for these 5 games. And I say I think earlier on you mentioned, Dave, that it might be we'd like to see a new man in by Stoke. And I think you're right. I think the reason we've made this decision now is because we want to get a steal, you know, march on all the other clubs that might be thinking about replacing managers. And also our recruitment policy going into that very shortened window that we're going to have.
Yeah, absolutely right. Five-week window. Ian, let me bring you in here. We said about Hughton, and then we've said, you know, if Ryan Lowe got it, he maybe gets a free hit season. What about if Paul Cook came in? Yeah. Now, he could resign from the Wigan job just like that. Yeah. So talk about availability. But if somebody like Paul Cook came in, who for me is midpoint between the two, he's neither a big name, but neither is he a rookie. He's got a track record of promotion, albeit from one to championship. What would your view be on Paul Cook if we failed to get Hughton or Jovanovic, whatever reason, and we thought we can't upset the fans by going for a real rookie? What would your view on Paul Cook be, were he to get it?
I think Paul Cook is an experienced lower division manager, and he's done okay in the Championship. He's done really well with Wigan of late, under extremely difficult circumstances. And I think he'd walk to Ashton Gate over 3 fields of broken glass to get the job at City. In terms of expectation, my expectation next year is that we go for the playoffs, because if we don't, if we have this free hit that you're talking about for a younger player, then the fans will put up with that to a point. But when we look like getting relegated because of it, no one's going to take the long-term view. No one's going to say, oh, well, you know, I know we got relegated, but then again, we brought all the young kids in and they're all there. Because what happened is, you get relegated and you lose your best players again.
Yeah.
So if we're going to move forward, and that there's only one way to move in any business, and that's forward. If you try and stand still, you'll go backwards. So if we're going to move forward, you go out and you get the best possible guy you can. You say, right, your job is to get us promoted. Yeah. And during the presentations they do, you say, okay, you take over at Bristol City tomorrow. This is, have a look at the players you've got, and you'd have hoped they'd have prepared something, whether it's on PowerPoint or Visio or whatever, and say, right, this is what I do, and these are the players that you've got. I'll get rid of these 10, and this is a good idea, we're bringing in somebody now. I'll get rid of these. We're going to have a very, very short pre-season and transfer window. I don't think that we're amazing. All this stuff about, oh, there's going to be no money around, I really don't get that, because all we've missed out on really is some commercial revenue and five or six home game revenues, which is a pain, but it's not.
The day. Yeah.
We've not missed out that much to stop it. And we're going to have to sell players if they won't sign new contracts. And I mean a lot.
We're coming up to 45 minutes. It's been a really interesting discussion. I've just got one thing for each of you guys, and certainly Ian and Peter will know this. I've always subscribed to the view that we've got too many average players and not enough stars. And let me explain what I mean by this. If you look at the 11 players that start and the 9 players that are on the bench, Bristol City could probably put out 2 teams of almost equal ability. Right? Now, I think that we tend to get have 25. We've got 25 players on an average of 12 grand a week, yeah? Whereas I think we...
Dave, I don't know if you can hear me, but all I can hear is a load of dishes.
I thought it was clubs in the bag.
I think Dave's gone.
Clubs in the bag. So, all right, if Dave, are you still there? Do you want me to ask a couple of questions? Right, I'll ask you. What Dave's getting at is, are we signing too many bang average players, and should we spend less money, not have 10 players on 10 grand a week, but perhaps have 3 players on 25, 30 grand a week? Yes. Over to whoever wants to jump in.
Agreed. That's Pete. Peter. Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that. And it is interesting the way that we seem to have, built our... I think we've got too many clubs in the bag, so to speak, and we ought to be relying on the 3, the 5 and the 7 and perhaps a sandwich of exceptional ability and building a team around them.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Dave?
Yeah, I agree. I think as well, when you bring in those 2 or 3... real quality players, I think raise the standards of everyone else. And I go back to 18-year-old Tammy Abraham, came from Chelsea, big reputation, even though he'd not really done that. And I think genuinely the players thought, I really want to play with this kid. I really want him to do well. And therefore, I'm going to raise my game for him as well. And I think that's a big part of it as well. And I think actually players quite like picking up win bonuses as well, even if they're not
playing the
same amount as other people.
I totally agree with you in that respect. You should have seen the influence that Tammy Abraham had on the pitch on a couple of lads on the bench who just signed for the City, and that was Adauda, Patterson and Brownhill. They came as youngsters and they were agog away at Wickham watching Tammy